Papa, non, en 2024, créer un site web n'est plus une galère, c'est même devenu ultra simple, et notamment grâce à des solutions comme Squarespace. Squarespace est la plateforme tout en un pour permettre aux entrepreneurs de se démarquer et réussir en ligne, et ce, quelle que soit la taille de leur activité. Vous allez voir, tout y est. Vous pouvez vendre vos produits physiques ou services en un temps record. Vous avez des centaines de templates de sites web canon dans tous les domaines. Vous pouvez créer vos campagnes email. Vous pouvez même vendre votre propre formation en ligne. Donc, si vous voulez donner à votre business toutes les chances de se développer avec un outil à la fois performant et très simple d'utilisation, eh ben, je ne peux que vous recommander d'aller sur le site squarespace.com. En plus, à l'occasion de ce partenariat, Squarespace vous offre moins 10% sur votre première commande de site web ou de domaine avec le code Pauline. Alors, n'attendez plus et rendez-vous sur squarespace.com, code Pauline. Hello, hello les amis, j'espère que vous allez bien. Ici Pauline Agneau et bienvenue dans un nouvel épisode de mon podcast. Avec ce podcast, pour ceux qui ne savent pas encore, j'interviewe des personnalités toutes plus remarquables les unes que les autres pour parler de leur réussite, de leurs échecs, de leur parcours et essayer de décrypter avec elles les clés d'un succès. Aujourd'hui, épisode spécial, je vous ai concocté ma deuxième interview en anglais avec un invité que j'aime beaucoup, Matt Spielmann. Avant toute chose, avant que vous ayez peur, que vous me disiez « Ah, mais attends, c'est en anglais, je vais rien pouvoir comprendre, Pauline !» Eh bien, sachez que si vous souhaitez bénéficier des sous-titres, vous pouvez également visionner cette vidéo sur YouTube. Donc, n'hésitez pas, vous mêlerez l'utile à l'agréable et vous aurez le plaisir de voir Matt et moi en train d'interagir, en plus avec les sous-titres. Alors, qui est ce fameux Matt Spielmann? Il est un célèbre coach américain. Il est le fondateur de Inflection Point Partners, une société de coaching florissante pour aider les entrepreneurs, les sportifs, les dirigeants à atteindre l'excellence dans tous les domaines de la vie. Pourtant, rien ne prédestinait Matt à devenir coach. Il a commencé sa carrière dans le domaine de la vente, du marketing, après néanmoins de brillantes études, hein, il avait fait Columbia et Harvard. Et pendant 20 ans, il a travaillé en tant que cadre supérieur, donc un peu comme vous et moi, on va dire, dans plein d'entreprises, petites et grandes, aux États-Unis. Comme il nous dira dans l'épisode, il s'est un jour rendu compte que ce qui le motivait vraiment, ce qui lui donnait envie de se lever chaque matin, c'était d'aider, c'était d'être utile, c'était de coacher ses collaborateurs, de les aider à grandir, à s'épanouir et à se réaliser. C'est pourquoi, un jour, il a décidé de sauter le pas, de franchir un énorme gap et, il y a 10 ans, de se reconvertir dans le monde du coaching. Aujourd'hui, il côtoie donc de nombreux CEO, des sportifs, des personnes remarquables dans tous les domaines et les aide à réaliser leurs rêves. J'ai absolument adoré avoir Matt sur le podcast pour plusieurs raisons. Déjà parce qu'on a parlé de ses visions du coaching, c'est un sujet qui m'intéresse aussi beaucoup, de comment construire son pourquoi, comment trouver sa voie et comment être sûr d'aller dans la bonne direction. Aussi, sachez pour la petite anecdote que Matt est en réalité le coach de mon mari, Sharif, et donc c'est vrai que ça crée un attachement personnel pour moi de me dire que j'ai pu avoir le privilège de l'inviter sur le podcast. Je remercie Matt de nous avoir embarqué dans ses anecdotes et de nous avoir livré de nombreuses réflexions qui, je l'espère, seront aussi utiles pour vous. Je vous ai d'ailleurs sorti un petit florilège de citations, en anglais donc, que j'ai trouvé vraiment particulièrement inspirante. La première, « Just because you're good at something, it doesn't mean you have to do it ». Celle-ci, je trouve qu'elle vaut vraiment la peine d'y méditer. La deuxième, « Success is having the ability and the desire to listen to oneself and then to have the courage to really act upon it ». Brillant, je trouve. On a aussi parlé de son livre, que je vous invite à découvrir, bien sûr, Discover Your Purpose with the Game Plan System, que je vous mettrai d'ailleurs dans les notes de l'épisode pour que vous puissiez en trouver la référence. Mais je ne vous en dis pas plus et laisse place à ma conversation with Coach Matt Spielmann. Hello, Matt.
Hello, Pauline. How are you doing today?
I am doing fine. I'm extremely excited about this interview. I'm also out of my comfort zone speaking in English with you, but I know you're going to help me out if some words are lacking. So
I definitely will. I think your English is better than mine.
I don't think so. But anyway, Matt, I'd like to start and jump in directly in a subject that is very interesting to me, and I hope to you and part of the audience. A quote I thought was extremely interesting in your book, Inflection Points, that I just read. It says, I quote, "Just because you're good at something, it doesn't mean you should do it." And this really resonated with me. I think it took me a while to understand this. And so I would love to know what makes you say this. And do you have maybe a specific example you could jump on with this?
I do. And thank you for asking me that question. It sounds a little bit on the surface as somewhat of a paradox, where just because you're good at something, maybe it should mean that you do it. And I actually found in my case, and in many other instances when I'm talking to other people, that it's the opposite. So I'll share with you the origination of that quote. And it was literally, I remember the day, or I remember the month. I don't remember the day, but it was May of 2010. And I was started working with my coach, Peter Hazelrigg, career coach, executive coach, kind of a coach in life. And I've been partnering with him for about 12 years or so. And I went to him because I felt like I was in career angst. As good as my job was, I felt like every day that I showed up to the office, I felt like I should be showing up somewhere else. And I didn't know where that was. And I couldn't get past the fact that I was, you know, this wonderful job and these wonderful colleagues, this really great company, and everything was terrific. And I was ascending, getting promoted, and all of that kind of stuff. And he said to me, Matt, just because you're good at something, it doesn't necessarily mean you have to do it. And it hit me like a ton of bricks. Yeah. And in a way where I said, man, that's really powerful. Those are very simple words, but it almost liberated me in a way to begin exploring, okay, how might I want to spend my time or allocate my time? What type of impact do I want to have? What office do I even want to go to an office, or do I want to? So it really triggered all kinds of questions. And it was with that very simple and seemingly paradoxical statement. But in my case, it was not.
So there's tons of questions now I want to ask. And one of them is about meaning. So as I told you, I read your book and you talk a lot about meaning in your book, meaning of life, meaning of work. And what's funny to me is that it seems that some people are born with a passion. Unfortunately, I was not born with a passion. And I think most of us are not, actually. I don't know if you had one when you were a child. But anyway, it's super hard, I find, for people who don't have a passion, because you always compare, you know, to those people that were born a natural piano artist or comedians or whatnot. And I think for a person like me, for instance, a high performer, it's not that easy not to have a passion, because you have goals, but you don't really know why you're striving for these goals. And this is a question that usually comes pretty late in life. And when you start to uncover it, it seems like it's almost impossible to answer that question. What is my why? Why should I be doing this? What is the meaning of my life and my career? And I know, of course, you spend a lot of time thinking about this. And so I would love to have, you know, your ideas and to have, you know, your first thoughts on how basically to start answering this question about what is my meaning? Why am I doing this?
Yeah. So I'm not so sure that, you know, you don't, or the audience doesn't have passions, you know, in the instances that you may be talking about. It may be sometimes passion can be a really like a loaded or emotionally charged or electrified word. I believe that everybody has interests. They have things that generate energy. Sometimes it's hard to articulate, you know, what is my purpose, or, you know, what is my passion? You know what you're interested in, though. You know what energizes you. You know what you may enjoy. You know what lights you up. And that could be, those could be really important guideposts, potentially even more than this loaded word of passion.
Yeah.
So we could get back to that. And there's an exercise in the book that people can do. You could download the very simple one-page tool and go through it. But I believe that, you know, there is a reason that people set a New Year's resolution, and it might last 2 or 3 weeks. You know, there's maybe I'm going to go to the gym 7 days a week or something along those lines, or they set some kind of what they think is a meaningful goal. But why do you think that it only goes maybe 2 or 3 or 4 weeks, maybe 5 weeks at most? Because I don't think people have thought about the why, or as I write in the book, the consequence behind the goal. So when we work with our clients and people are writing out a goal, we really hold them to what is the meaning behind that goal. And I'll share with you an example. So one of my clients, it was a couple of years ago, it was actually before the pandemic. And she said, I really want to run, there's a marathon in Minnesota in the United States. and she had never run a marathon before. And she said, I really want to run a marathon. And I said, okay, you know, what about that is a meaningful goal for you? And she said, well, you know, something that I haven't done before. And I said, okay, you mentioned that, you know, what else about it? Well, I grew up in Minnesota, and I think it would be a celebration of the city and the area more broadly. And I said, okay, that's really nice. And that's meaningful. What else? Well, Matt, my family is going to be there, and my dad has been battling some health issues. And I said, and I paused there, and I said, well, where are they going to be situated, you know, along the route? And she said, well, my dad can't really get around the entire route, but he's going to be at the finish line. And I said, okay, well, let's. So we proceeded down this. I knew, and she started to get emotional about it. And that was kind of her why. Yes, it was a celebration of fitness. It was a goal that she hadn't done before. It was in a location that she, in an area in a city that she loved. And really, it was bringing together her family and crossing in the finish line, you know, where she would embrace her family. And that was the image that really came to mind. So on her document, her game plan that housed that particular goal, yes, the what of the goal was to complete the marathon in Minnesota. The why of the goal, or the consequence of the goal, was really to kind of embrace my family, to share it with my family, much deeper than just to complete a marathon and a meaningful accomplishment, which it is. It is. And then we also, on this document, we tap into the power of visualization, where she selected an image of her embracing her family. And then she used that during the training of getting up in the morning. And I'm not sure I want to get up, but she conjured up that image of, okay, I want to be ready. I want to complete this. I want to embrace my family at the end of the finish line. So finding the meaning or the why behind it is actually critical for bringing that goal about. Now, here's the postscript to the story. The actual marathon was canceled due to COVID. So because we did the work of finding the why behind the goal, she wasn't crushed. Yes, she was disappointed that they canceled the marathon. It was unfortunate for the whole city and all that. But the why behind it was to celebrate something with her family. So she put together an alternative goal, venue, area where she could bring her family together. And because that was what was really important for her. And it was just an alternative way of doing it. But had we not really delved into the why behind it or the consequence of that goal, I'm not sure we ever would have pivoted to something that was almost just as meaningful, in some ways, even more.
Yeah. So a few follow-ups. First of all, it seems in this story, and it's super interesting that you go in so much details, that she at first didn't really know what was her why, and that you had to coach her basically and to go and, you know, dive deep down, because at first it was more like an impression, a general idea that there was going to be meaning in this marathon, but it really took like some time and effort to pinpoint the why. Is this something that's like often the case?
It is often the case. And that's why I do believe it's tough to do this solely by ourselves when we create. And for the audience, I'm holding up a laminated game plan that houses four. It could be five. It could be three. Typically, it's four. And Pauline, we spend a couple of weeks on these four goals, yeah, where somebody may say something and I'm keeping my value system completely off to the side. This is all what is important to you, what is emerging from within you. And we do go a couple of whys deeper. You know, on the surface, she could have said a marathon. Wonderful. That's great. I'm going to participate in this marathon. However, if it's going to be meaningful, if it's going to be enduring, if it's going to be consequential, I think we need to go a couple of layers deeper. And to answer your question, we have to do that with everybody. And whether one is working with a coach or one is working with a partner or a family member, it's good to have this dialogue back and forth. And I really encourage people to share what we call this game plan, that single page document that I held up for you. Because once you share it with somebody else, they can, first, you're giving them line of sight into what matters to you. And a lot of times we talk about accountability, transparency, and alignment, almost like buzzwords in the business world. Well, when you hand somebody a key stakeholder in your life that which matters to you and that which you're working on and towards, there is accountability, transparency, and alignment. And I know, so Sharon, my wife, and my two boys who are 18 and 17 have a copy of my game plan, you know, and there's that, they know what I'm working on and towards and what matters to me, and it holds me a little bit of accountable. And I do ask them to not challenge me in a like a confrontational way, but ask me about these goals and what are meaningful and consequential to me.
Super interesting. So we're going to circle back to meaning and to the why, because I have a few other questions, but maybe you could broadly explain the concept of the game plan. So a few of our listeners are not seeing the game plan. So if you could maybe explain it so that they can see. And of course, dear auditors, don't hesitate to go and look at the game plan in Matt's book and on YouTube too.
Yeah. So, and I encourage people, one doesn't have to buy the book in order to download these materials, but this template is available to everybody for free. And it's at theinflectionpointsbook.com. But yeah, the game plan, which is part, Pauline, of a larger game plan system, or GPS is the acronym. The GPS being something that provides us direction that we want to go towards. And oftentimes in life, or when we're driving, we set the coordinates for the GPS. And there's often traffic, or God forbid, some accidents or something along the way. And it's going to reroute us around those friction points, those barriers or obstacles to ultimately get there. So it's called the GPS, the game plan system. The game plan is the centerpiece of it. And yeah, I'll get into the description of it in just a moment. Preceding that, though, we want to gather information about ourselves. And that was what I was talking a little bit about before. So when we go see a doctor, we don't just walk in and he or she says, you know, you have such and such. We need to gather information. There might be blood tests. There might be a family history. So before we actually sit down and pen a game plan, there are a couple of exercises that we do. One of which is this sources and drains of energy. So the things that you're doing on a day-to-day basis, the tasks could be at work, could be outside of work, but the things that energize you would go on the left-hand side of the page. And the drains of energy would go on the right-hand side of the page. And we get insight into what is it that brings us, you know, we talked about potentially that elusive word passion. Well, this is a way to actually identify what brings us, you know, what brings us to life.
Yeah, it's a more relatable passion in a way, if I understand correctly.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And then the other thing that we do, and somebody could download this as well, it's called the purpose puzzle. And for your audience, picture a 3x3 jigsaw puzzle that houses nine, like a square, that has nine pieces in it. Pieces that are entitled life partner, career, friends, health, finances, physical environment, etc. And what you do, and it takes about 5 or 10 minutes to take an inventory of where you are in that time in your life, like let's say right now. And on a scale from 1 to 5, how are you feeling about that facet or piece of your life that's contributing to how you're feeling on a day-to-day basis? So a 5 would be really awesome, and a 1 would be, I'm not really feeling all that good about it. And we color code it. So 1 is on the pink side and 5 is more crimson, and there are shades of the red in between. So when you've done this 9-piece puzzle, you actually get a visible representation of where you are right now. Now that, along with some other tools that we use that are also in the tools that you can download, that informs the creation of the game plan. Where might I want to focus my time to increase the 1s or 2s to a 4 or a 5? We may want to identify, let's say, at the center of that purpose puzzle is health. And it's interconnected for a reason. I mean, I believe that the puzzle was intentional because it interacts with all sorts of other facets or pieces of our life. So we may want to set a goal around that and work towards that to get that number up. So the next time we do the purpose puzzle, it registers a 4 or a 5. But those goals inform the creation of the game plan. And on the game plan, it's very simple. It's 4 goals like I said, it could be manipulated such that it's 5 or 3. But Pauline, it's really important that it's not 9, it's not 12, it's not 15, it's not 20. These are well chosen. Too many is, you know, fewer is better. And if they're well chosen goals, they have a wildly positive cascading effect across your entire life. So we have the what of the goal, which is, I'm going to garner or gain 20 clients, for example. We have the by when of the goal, so the time horizon, by the end of this year. We have the consequence or meaning of that goal that we write in. And there's usually, it's probably 3 or 4 lines. It's not much more than that, but we've given it, we've gone a couple of whys deeper. Why is getting 20 clients for you by the end of the year meaningful for you, aside from maybe just the obvious? And then we list 3, 4, or 5 key actions that work in service of bringing about that particular goal. We try to be as specific or explicit when possible, because when we check in on the goal at a future point in time, we want to know how we're pacing against it. And if we're not specific enough, sometimes we don't always know, you know, how we're doing. We do, as I mentioned before, we tap into the power of visualization. So we will lift an image off the internet that generally crystallizes or captures that particular goal. And then we do something fun at the top, kind of like a hashtag or a headline or a branding of that goal, which is like if somebody's doing something around health, like health matters or some kind of hashtag at the top. So when you look at it, you can really, it captures that goal in 1, 2, or 3
words. Idea. And are the 4 goals aligned necessarily? I mean, do you have specific areas that you always try to address? Or is it really like my goal could be on health and business and having a dog or something? And, you know?
Yeah. So it's a really good question. And they can be all different. And I would say in the hundreds that we've done, I typically have seen that it's about 2 or 3 business related, because a lot of my times I'm meeting folks in the business context. And so call it 2 or 3 business related. And 1 is more personal, like familial, friends, or health, but more like non-business related. And what I found is that oftentimes even the business related ones, they're what I call integrated goals. So working in service of 1. So let's say, just trying to come up with an example. Let's say somebody wants to really put him or herself in a position to get promoted. And all the activities that that person can do or that work in service of that. We can't always control where we get promoted, but we can put ourselves in a position to be considered to be promoted. Okay, let's say that's 1 goal. Another goal is somebody really enjoys learning and wants to learn a computer coding language, right? So that would be a separate goal. And those are integrated goals because working in service of 1 helps increase the chances that you're going to achieve the other. And that's kind of the gold standard for goal achieving theory, which is this is all about achieving meaningful outcomes, not just setting a goal or even creating a really nice document. It's all about bringing about meaningful outcomes. So the integrated notion can be really powerful, where the time you spend working on this one also helps inch you closer and move you closer to the one over here.
But also, I'm sure that, I mean, when you put on paper the 4 or 5 goals or 3 goals, you can also have perspective and just realize actually this goal, maybe I want to run a marathon in less than 4 hours. Yeah. And my other goal is achieving such and such business success. Yeah. Maybe they're not always compatible because running a marathon would mean, for instance, having a lot of training. Maybe they are. But I mean, also, I would assume that having the 4 goals also is a means to taking a little bit of insight and saying maybe this is right now not my priority. Is it also the general strategy is also important?
Absolutely. And context matters in one's life. And that would come about through conversations. With whether it's another person in your life or if you do have a coach, where we would talk about, let's say the marathon is something that you always wanted to do, but right now may not be the best time.
I think my why is not strong enough.
Maybe why is not strong enough, or maybe it's more just right now. And, there's the conversation could take the form of, if that is something that you want to do, let's understand some of the drivers behind it. What else could you do that would resemble that? For sure. But they're different for everybody, and it can be informed by this purpose puzzle that I shared before, which these nine different facets or pieces of your life. And that really helps, because a lot of times if we didn't have these conversations going back and forth, and we didn't have that filtering mechanism in a way with the purpose puzzle, people have all sorts of things going on in their head, these ruminating thoughts and the things I want to do. And it can be really overwhelming, and they don't really know where to begin. Well, that's a good place to really begin. Yeah. And everybody's can be different. Everybody's can be different. And yes, there are instances when a goal can seemingly be at odds with another goal. And you mentioned that maybe running a marathon could be at odds with something in business. I might challenge that, because people tend to be more disciplined and they're following a structure. And also they're more at peace. If they're exercising regularly, they might be more creative. They might generate ideas. So I might challenge that a little bit, you know, in a very fun way. I haven't necessarily seen too many goals that are work at odds with one another.
Okay, very clear. So honestly, there's so many questions I would like to delve into on this subject, but I think my audience also wants to hear more about you. Maybe just one last quick question on the book. A sentence I read, actually, there's a whole chapter in which you write that basically success alone is unfulfilling if you're succeeding a role that doesn't excite you. It again comes back to this idea of energy. It comes back to this idea of the why, I guess. But this is something I wanted to talk about, because I'm sure you've had so many examples in people that you met that are highly successful. And then when you actually dive deep into their lives, you realize that they're not that happy. And this is something very important, I think, because of course we all compare with social media all the time and with, you know, the media, etc. So I thought it was very, very insightful of you to write this. Would you have, of course, without telling anyone's name or whatever, but would you have specific examples that would prove this? And maybe could you just elaborate on this idea?
Yes. So thank you for asking me about that. And, you know, this notion of what does success look like? It's a very personal thing. And only we know inside, you know, whether we are successful or not. Now, I'll share with you a mini story that I wrote about a little bit in the book. I was in graduate school, and we were studying this about this a decision point, a career decision point that the protagonist in this business school case needed to respond to. He had two job opportunities. The first one was at a really well-known company, and it was making a certain amount of money. And almost, you know, on the surface, that was the logical choice for him to go, was because he would be more successful. The other choice was a startup, lesser known. And the majority of the people in our graduate school class raised their hand and they said, oh yeah, he should go to such and such a company. He'd be more successful if he did that. And I was like jumping out of my seat and I was raising my hand, and I was all like, Professor Kang called on me and he said, Matt, it looks like you're jumping out of your seat. You have something, you likely have something to say. And I said, yeah, I think his decision about where he's going to go is a really personal one. And it comes back to what, you know, his definition of success is, you know, not the job title, not the company, and not the money. And Professor Kang said, well, what is your definition of success? And I said something to the effect of having the ability and the desire to listen to oneself, and then the courage to really act upon it. So it's that truth that we have inside, and that our actions hopefully should resemble that truth. And if that person really wanted to pursue that other category or that other job because he was really drawn to the tasks, or he wants to live in that part of the country with, you know, his girlfriend at the time, and that's really what he wanted to do, then that decision would be a successful decision for him, because that was most reflective of what was coming from within. So when you meet people who are out there and they're the CEO of this company or the managing partner of this company, and they live in this particular house, on the surface, it may look like success, but only he or she knows inside whether they've been true to the decisions that are coming from within, or maybe some other type of decisions that really impacted their actions that they took. I see it all the time in my work. And, you know, on maybe on a lesser extent, I experienced it myself, which what at age 44 triggered me to go back to school and transition from executive to executive coach. So, you know, only we know inside, and we're not necessarily the ones to judge other people about, you know, whether they are successful or not. And I would also leave you and the audience with this is I've interacted with thousands of people in this profession now. Everybody is dealing with headwinds. Everybody has challenges. Everybody wakes up and they have issues that they're dealing with. And, you know, oftentimes, whether it's on social media or just more broadly, we may feel like we're the only ones who are sort of dealing with challenges. No, that ain't the case.
Thank you for this very healthy reminder, Matt. So this was a perfect transition for going back to your childhood and you. Could you describe where you were raised? How was your family? You know, the environment basically where you're risen. And more importantly for me, how was little Matt?
So for the audience, I'm speaking to you. I'm about 25 miles north of New York City. And I was raised, if we go due west, maybe 10 or 15 miles in a county, Rockland County in West Nyack, New York, about 26 miles northwest of New York City. And I grew up there. It was a challenging childhood. My mom moved out when I was 10. My brother moved out a year or two later. He's 5 years older than I am. And I grew up with my dad, who was working a lot. However, like I mentioned, it was challenging. It was the best thing that ever happened to me because I had to learn, like the fire had to burn from within. So nobody ever asked me about doing my homework or taking care of myself or doing the dishes or cleaning. I've just been doing that since I was 10 years old. So the fire burns from within. And that was one of my greatest competitive advantages that I ever could have experienced, really. And as a result of, you know, that particular time, I went to university in New York City and a wonderfully rich 4 years at Columbia University. And I was fortunate enough to participate and play. Baseball is really big here in the United States. And it was a lifelong dream of mine was to play baseball at that level. I had just a one going to school and university in New York City, get to participate in all the museums and the Broadway shows and the jazz clubs. It was a wonderful place to go to university. And I worked in financial services at a firm called Morgan Stanley for 3 years. And then I went to graduate school, as I was talking about before. I went to Harvard Business School and spent 2 years in Cambridge. And that was an absolutely incredible experience, most notably because I met my wife there. And as of this recording, we've been married 22 years next
Congratulations.
Friday.
Congratulations.
So that was a wonderful takeaway from the 2 years. And it was just a great, great experience. And then the time that I graduated was around 99, 2000, where the internet absolutely exploded. And it really paved the way for some dynamic and interesting experiences where we joined small companies, raising capital, growing the companies, you know, increasing revenue, opening up offices, all that sort of fine stuff. And I was fortunate enough to be part of 3 acquisitions. And I also work for larger organizations as well. I referenced before where that quote of just because you're good at something doesn't mean you necessarily have to do it. I spent 6 wonderful years at MTV Networks, parent company Viacom, I think has been renamed recently to Paramount. And I loved it there. I really liked the people, but I did feel like I wanted to allocate my time and have a different type of impact on people, which triggered with the help of my coach, Peter Hazelrig, who kind of let me free, triggered this exploration of how could I more appropriately spend my time and deliver the type of impact that really lights me up.
So, Matt, you're extremely humble, of course, on your career, but I know that being, you know, in a graduate school and playing baseball professionally in this context is extremely competitive. On the other hand, you became a coach later on in life. So my question, I guess, would be at the time, would you say at the time when you were playing baseball, was your why, if we come back to the game plan, was your why about this game and about the sport and about, you know, all of this? And has your why basically shifted? Could you walk us through basically this shift in your, you know, if there was a shift, of course, maybe there was not. But yeah. in your personal, basically, you know, quest for a meaning in your career and in your life.
Yeah. So you, on the baseball front, I never pursued playing professionally. I played on the collegiate level.
Okay.
And that was a key decision point for me of I was good enough to give it a try, and making the major league baseball is quite a long route, and it's usually 3 or 4 or 5 years. But I actually consulted, without knowing some of this language at the time when I was 22 years old, I consulted myself, and the why wasn't strong enough for me to continue. It was something that I really enjoyed expressing myself in that type of a way. I'd worked really hard at playing the game and I achieved a certain level. And I really loved the camaraderie of my teammates, helping the team win and really contributing to the team, but it wasn't enough for me to continue. Fast forward a bit in my career, and I had achieved some fairly senior positions, a chief marketing officer role, a chief revenue officer role, general manager of, you know, large organizations. And the thing that really, getting back to the sources and drains of energy exercise, sources of energy, we're seeing the folks who are on my team and then the people who reported to the folks who are on my team, seeing them grow, develop, thrive, just having them enjoy coming to work every day. Because I didn't want it to be just a job. I wanted it to be a career for them. That was my fuel. I love that. And at the time, that wasn't my sole responsibility. My sole responsibility was to market or sell a product or service, was to run a division. So really the pivot was, how can I do more of my work and impact people one-on-one or one-to-many in more the way that I want to, with not sort of running a business unit or not selling or marketing a product? And it came down to this coaching profession, which I hadn't necessarily heard of, you know, 15 years ago. But it was through partnering with my coach, Peter Hazelrig, where one day I turned to him and I said, I want to do what you're doing in my way, in a slightly different way, but I want to do what you're doing. And that's how that came about. And I wanted to do it the right way. Anybody, I feel like today, can call him or herself a coach. And I wanted to demonstrate to folks that I take it seriously, and I wanted to learn the science behind the coaching conversation. So I invested years in the training. I went back to Columbia University. They have a really rigorous coaching certification program. I went to Duke University, their Duke School of Integrated Medicine, and I became a board certified health and wellness coach. And then there are other certifications and other schoolings that I really wanted to do my job really well and maximize my impact, and also message to my clients that I take this really seriously.
How old were you at the time when this decision came upon you?
Pauline, I was 44 years old. And I mentioned my wife, Sharon, just before. And I may have launched this company in Flexpoint Partners, and we're impacting, you know, hundreds of people across the globe. Somebody also sitting here right now is Sharon, where she completely had my back and said, you know, I encourage you to do this. Let's figure out how we're going to make this work. And I basically took a year off, kind of. I did some consulting to help pay some bills, but she really supported me. I was 44 years old.
That's why I asked the question, because, I mean, such a change in career when you've had such a successful career, corporate career, is honestly extremely difficult for oneself, but also for, you know, the surroundings, like all the people around you. So I wanted to ask you about, you know, I mean, Sharon, but obviously all the people around you, even professionally, I would suppose people had pretty difficult sometimes reactions to this change.
People who have, they know me, and they've gotten to know me, and they have line of sight into what makes me tick. You know, Sharon said to me, she said, Matt, I when you're alive and when you're passionate about something, it's the greatest. And when you're like in black, in color, when you're muted and in black and white, and you're just kind of moving this sideways, you know, that's when you're less, you know, your best. And like, let's do whatever we can. So, you know, you're expressing yourself in the way you want to express yourself. When I told people that I was transitioning from executive to executive coach or career coach, or coach as a profession, they said, oh, that makes a whole lot of sense. I see you doing that. And in August of 2016, when I launched Inflection Point Partners, I launched with 8 clients. 5 of them used to be people who worked for me. So I think it was a very natural transition. It was a very natural transition. People sort of saw me, they could see me doing this kind of work. I mean, potentially even more than the work that I was doing before.
And on your part, was there an apprehension? Was it scary in a way to leave the corporate, I mean, to become an entrepreneur?
Yeah. You know, looking back, no, it was not. As crazy as that sounds, my why was like, we get back to my why. Like, and I had time to really think about it and to go through all the exercises and to take all these courses and to, and if I'm going to make this bet, I really need to know like kind of the why, right? And so my why is to ignite careers and energize lives and to trigger the fist pump, you know, in whatever version that is for you, the fist pump. And I was pretty clear that I was going to bring that about. And I'd known that some other people had made a living, you know, being doing this and being a coach. I was not, no, there wasn't fear. There was not. Now, me answering this question, looking back 6 years ago, like, wow, how could I have not felt like there was, you know, that's a bit of a risky situation. If you had asked me at the time, I would have said, you know, if you had said, well, Matt, like, this is a really risky decision, I would have said to you something like, well, the risk is that I don't do it. And that I wake up 10 years later and I haven't done this yet. That would be the real risk. There were points along the way when I'm, oh my goodness, am I generating enough revenue that I need to? And, but there was no, at the time I was pretty set on this path.
You mentioned the fact that you went through a long training and that you really invested in that. And so it's a good transition for me because I wanted to talk about the art of coaching. First question I think for people listening is, who is coaching for? Is it everyone? I mean, your type of coaching, of course, Inflection Points, but is there like a specific type of persona? Is it a time in life where it comes upon you? Like, how could you describe this?
So it's not a specific type of persona and not necessarily, well, so I do believe that everybody can benefit from a trusted, trained, third-party, objective person who is there to listen and hear you, period. There's so much listening and hearing. There's so little listening and hearing that's going on right now. And just people feel so alone. And just having somebody there kind of who can really hear and ingest what it is that we're saying almost helps us feel validated and to be recognized. It's a basic human need. So I do believe, just I'll share that. It doesn't have to come from a trained coach. It could be just somebody that you really trust. But somebody who's not necessarily going to layer on his or her own things that you should do, or you should take this, or you should go, like, no, like it needs, let's, that relationship needs to focus on you. Now, the most successful coaching partnerships I have come when that person raises his or her hand and says, I would really like to enter into a coaching partnership. So it comes from within. Oftentimes people will reach out to me and say, oh, my husband would really benefit from coaching. Can I introduce you to him? I said, well, I'm looking forward to meeting your husband. Have him reach out to me. And 50% of the time he does or he doesn't. But it really needs to come from within. The most successful partnerships come when that person raises his or her hand. The other thing is, and this is a real sea change in coaching, whereas maybe 7 to 10 years ago, if somebody was really struggling at work or somebody was really having a difficult time in his or her life, that they felt like maybe let's get a coach. You know, Matt didn't do so well in his performance review. Let's get him a coach. that has actually changed to who is the best performer at our company and let's get her a coach. I really want to accomplish this. I really want to run this marathon in Minnesota. Let me get a coach and let me assemble other experts on my, let's say, personal board of directors for me to bring that about. So almost moving from a scarlet letter C to a badge of honor, you know, to a badge of honor. So the coaching is less for remedial and more to kind of kick butt in somebody's life, in the workforce, in the workplace, or outside of it. You mentioned at different points in life. Yes. I mean, there's a reason I called the company inflection points, that there may be points in somebody's life where it really could benefit from additional thinking, consideration, questions, understanding motives and drivers and why. And that's the time where I like to say, you know, slowing down in order to speed up later can really be an awesome time to engage a trusted, trained, objective, third-party person. But I believe everybody can benefit. You know, I've had a coach for 12 years and it can be for everybody, but it's not for everybody.
But it's so refreshing, you know, to know that even coaches can benefit from coaching. I mean, it's great just to know this.
I would even go farther than that. I would even say if you're entertaining working with a partnering with a coach and that person is not being coached, run to somebody else run to another coach who is.
Good piece of advice, Matt. Thanks a lot. What do people you think underestimate when they start a coaching partnership? Do you think there's like, is it time? Is it the energy? Is it the involvement? Is it something else? I don't know.
Well, they may overestimate the time and the energy. I think they underestimate the impact. They know, let's say, psychoanalysis or therapy, that people can really resolve challenges and they feel a lot better afterwards. Coaching is not therapy, but it's therapeutic. And I think people underestimate how much, at the end of a session, how much more energy they have because they've kind of cleared some hurdles and some obstacles. And that there's more intentionality to their actions. There's more conviction to how they're going about the day and just how great that feels. So I think they underestimate that. What might they overestimate about it? Or underestimate? I'm not sure. I lost the original question. I changed the question. So you may want to rephrase the question.
Don't worry. Well, I guess the more broader question is, are there a lot of misconceptions that you often see about coaching?
Yes. So I would say that one of the biggest misconceptions is that people want to arrive, sit down, sometimes we do it by video, and they want to break out a pen and paper and start writing their goals. Okay, let's get to work. Okay. Again, I use the medical analogy. You don't walk into a doctor's office and, you know, we have to, what are your values? What matters to you? Tell me about your background. When did you feel most alive? What are you most proud of? What are the things that are disappointing? So we administer assessments and we sometimes will do a 360 degree assessment as well and gather information, you know, from the workplace. Sometimes I'll talk to key stakeholders, a spouse or somebody else, maybe children I've spoken to before. So we want to gather information. We don't just sit down and we don't just kind of dive in and we don't just start creating game plans or action plans.
Another question about the art of coaching is, I guess, relating to you or all the partners you have in Inflection Points is, according to you, what are the most difficult parts of being a coach?
By far, the most difficult part of being a coach is really staying open and not coming in with the advice monster, where somebody is struggling with something and like, I feel like I know the answer. Just go to the gym in the mornings because later in the day, your work is going to pile up and you're not going to make it to the gym. But that's where we really have to hold that. That's why the training is so important, because I could write down on a piece of paper the answers for you. That doesn't mean all that much to you. The only real learning that you'll ever have is that which comes from within. And that's the hardest part. But there are other relationships that people have in their life where, you know, they have mentors, they have advisors, they have friends, they have parents, they have managers, and they get all the advice in the world from them. But our coach's job is not to kind of say, well, you should do this, you should do this, you should do this. In fact, the question is more not what should you do? It's more what could you do at this moment that is most reflective of what's coming from within?
I must say it must be quite, frustrating in a way when you have like a huge answer, you know, lying in front of you and you're just like burning inside and you just have to say, okay, no, I'm not going to say anything and try to have this person basically deliver the answer.
And just because it's an answer for me doesn't mean it's an answer for you.
Mm.
And there's an adage that people may have heard of, you know, you can give somebody a fish and they could eat for a day, or you could teach somebody how to fish and they'll eat for a lifetime. So part of this process, this is an empowerment. The coaching partnership is an empowerment partnership, and it's much more reflective in nature than it is directive or prescriptive in nature. And I picture this, you know, for your audience. So, and even where the word coach came from is stagecoach, where you are the client or the coachee is behind the wheel. Your hands are on the wheel. And your coaching partner, me, I'm in the passenger seat. You know, your feet are on the, you know, you can go forward and the gas pedal, although in a stagecoach, there is no gas pedal, but you can go with me here.
Yeah.
And we're going to enter the stagecoach at the point of origination. And it's through the power of the partnership. It's me asking questions and it's you providing, you know, the answers that are coming from within. That provides the kinetic energy to move that stagecoach from the point of origination to where you are, to where you want to go. And you're determining the coordinates of where you want to go. You've plugged them into the GPS of where you want to go. Those are outcomes or goals that emerge from within you because your hands are on the wheel. You're determining where you want to go. And that's one of the best ways I could describe the coaching partnership.
Super interesting and very, I know you'd love visualization. I can vividly see, you know, the image. So thanks a lot for this. Matt, when I end the interview, I always have a few personal questions, if you're up for them. The first one is there a great failure, a great lesson that you could share with us? Something that maybe happened in your life, not according to plan, and most importantly, what you've learned from this failure or mistake?
Yeah. So thank you for asking that. In my second year at university, when I was playing baseball, I had, and I write about this in the book quite a bit, I lost confidence in myself. I did not believe in myself that I was worthy of earning that starting role on the team and really contributing to the team. And I just lost all confidence. And I got really nervous when I was playing and I essentially sabotaged my performance. And after 10 games, the coach had really no other option but to remove me from the starting role, the starting team, and put me on the bench where I watched the balance of the 35 games that particular year. And the good news is that the story didn't end there. After the season, I was diagnosed with a shoulder injury and I had shoulder surgery. And so I lost my starting job and I couldn't necessarily raise my arm, but that was great point for me, having reached a nadir, the lowest point, and saying, you know what? I like this game. I love this game. I want to come back and do what I can to come back. And I proceeded to work my way back into the starting lineup. And that next spring, my third year, my junior year of university, I did win back the starting role and I had a really wonderful year. But it was less about the success, you know, less about the hits and less about the home runs and less about the plays that I made. And it was more the internal victory that I had made, that I did believe myself. I was good enough to be standing out on the field. And I carry that lesson with me every single day. And I learned more about the failure and from the failure than I did had I never experienced it and just, quote, succeeded, you know, my sophomore year, and et cetera.
So you mean that the lesson would be that it was that you were not emotionally invested enough. And so you had to conjure up this energy to be back in the game? What was specifically the lesson that you've learned from this experience?
I think there are two. One is there was a reason why I didn't feel like I was good enough. And I had to ultimately, you know, metaphorically speaking, look in the mirror and say, you know what? I am good enough. I am good enough to be standing out there. I deserve to be standing out there. I've earned the right to be standing out there. And no little mind games are going to talk me out of it, that I am going to be stand there and I'm going to be confident that I can play. So it was basically overcoming. It was a battle with myself. It was a battle with myself, really. It wasn't battling any other teammates or any other competition. It was a battle with myself. And then ultimately, yes, working my way through rehabilitation with my shoulder, there's a lot of grit and perseverance and, you know, keeping a positive attitude and ultimately, you know, winning back that starting role.
If you could change anything in your personal or professional life, when you take, you know, a 200 kilometer view, worldview on your life, what would you do differently?
I tend not to think like that. However, I wanted Inflection Points to work so badly that I waived all business in, you know, 6 years ago. And there was a point a couple of years ago when I began to cripple underneath my own weight of all the activity that I had started. And I had a really tough time when people reached out to me. I had a tough time saying no, frankly. And maybe it wasn't the right engagement for me. Maybe I was really busy at that time and I probably shouldn't have said no. I should have said no and I shouldn't have said yes. And I think I felt like maybe I'd be disappointing them. Or so I think I took on too much. I've gotten much better at saying no. There's this wonderful book that I read at the end of last year called The Daily Stoic. And it's like every single day, there's like words of wisdom. And one was, I believe, by Marcus Aurelius, where he says, if you say yes to something, you say no to something else. And conversely, if you say no to something, you're saying yes to something else. So it's just the law of the universe. And I realized that when I was saying yes to something, I was saying no to something else. And that no was, that something else was me. So I probably could have done a little bit better job of saying no, but I, you know, in the last year and a half, 2 years, I've gotten much better at it. And that's also why I've added about 13 or 14 coaches to the coaching roster. So it's a little bit of no, but, or no, and I have these amazing coaches. So, but I took on too much and it took a toll on me, and it's a mild regret I have.
Thank you for sharing it. Do you have a maxim, a quote, words of wisdom that are specifically important to you that you could maybe share with us?
Yes. So I have several. And there's one I'm looking off to my right. There's Jackie Robinson, who was the first African-American baseball player to play in Major League Baseball in the 40s. He has a quote that says, "A life is not important except in the impact that it has on other lives." And I feel like the work that I'm doing is definitely focused on working in service of and positively impacting others. So that's one. But another one, and it goes back to our earlier conversation about passion, and it's really hard to identify that. I agree. And so did Viktor Frankl. So Viktor Frankl wrote Man's Search for Meaning in the late 40s. And he agreed that it is really hard to identify one's purpose, one's mission, one's passion. And he recommended that we sort of flip the question a little bit. He says that you can ask yourself, what might life be asking of you? And I have found that flipping that to going outside of us actually really helps me and a lot of my clients and a lot of other people I've spoken to help find answers, because what begins to emerge are the things that you're interested in, that you care about, that you are passionate about, that you have energy around. And so it's less about what is my mission, what is my purpose, and it's more about what is life asking of me. And you could even make it more micro, which is, you know, what might this specific situation be asking of me? And it's sort of this voice outside of ourselves. And I find that to be really, really powerful.
Yeah, thanks a lot for sharing this. It also removes, I feel, a lot of fear of you know, of a part in part of the responsibility that sometimes we put too much on ourselves. Maybe responsibility is not the right word, but the weight, I would say, that we put on ourselves. So thanks a lot for sharing this, Matt.
Sure.
A few more questions. First of all, my non-politically correct question, I like it a lot. Is there something that you believe that is actually not a shared belief? So for instance, I had someone on the podcast telling me that actually older people are not wiser, contrary to what we think, because they have a lot of cognitive biases. So like a belief that you have that you realize is not usually widely shared.
I do think this slowing down to go faster is this maxim that, again, sounds paradoxical on the surface. But if we really want to cover a whole lot of ground and go as fast and as speedy as we want to, we do need to take, inhale, exhale, assess the situation, and maybe engage others, do some assessments. But it's something I have to talk to a lot of, especially the people that I talk to, Pauline, who are really high achieving and high powered, and they want to get stuff done and they want to check things off of their list.
Yeah.
It's this slowing down to go faster. And they also like, no, they look at me in a really sort of quizzical way when I say that. I'm like, no, I want to get stuff done. I'm like, okay, if you really want to get stuff done in a meaningful and consequential way, we're going to take a little bit of a pause. I'm like, no, I don't want to take a pause. No, but it's going to be. So maybe that.
There's a saying, I don't know. So maybe a little French lesson, although you may not be interested, but there's a saying in France called reculer pour mieux sauter. So it literally means to go back in order to be able to jump further. So yes. I guess it would be this idea.
Yes.
Having more focus on the long term than on the short term. We have the saying, but I'm not sure we're good at doing it.
Yes. Well, I don't think many people are really good at doing it. I would say any, some are. And that's why it's, that's where the coaching partnership can really be beneficial.
Yeah, for sure. A subject on which you've changed your mind.
So a subject on which I've changed my mind. I did grow up really thinking about brands, company names, schools, that would stand out and that were really important. So I did seek, names of companies and names of institutions. And I really, as I learned, a lot of that stuff doesn't really matter at all. And it's going back to that notion of on the surface success versus what is below is what's really important. And there are a lot of reasons why people either do or do not go to a certain institution or work at a certain place. And there's generally all sorts of stories that it would benefit us from double clicking and really understanding what drove people and their decisions and how they came about to where they are. Growing up, I was drawn to the shiny name and the shiny object and the, I admit I was.
But do you think it was because you thought it would mean success? It was your definition of success? Was it because of a lack of confidence
Probably. I mean, I've thought about this topic a lot. So going a little bit deep, with you in the audience, I think my world was so rocked at a young age that I wanted to do whatever I could to create stability and to create insurance and to create some, cement and some hard stone. And that helped come in the form of, a really good institution, a really good company, really good. So if I had these brand names and I could be messed with less type of a thing. So that's probably where it came from.
Thanks for sharing it, Matt. And the last question is about a book I love to read. As I told you, I really enjoyed your book and really, I know it's not yet available in French, but it's very well written and it's easy to read. It's not too long. So I really wish that the audience will discover it. And I'll put the notes in the show notes, of course. But is there a book that has a great impact on you that maybe changed your thinking, changed your mind, that really, made you who you are today that you could share with us?
Yeah. So I have to go back. If somebody asked me this question, to Viktor Frankl in Man's Search for Meaning. And not only did he say, what is life asking of you, but it is all about kind of finding the why. And he echoes Friedrich Nietzsche in the book where he says, the person who has the why and understands the why can get through almost any how. And there have been many other authors, whether it's Simon Sinek or others, where they focus on the importance of the why. And that has been the single driver in my life of making the transition from executive to executive coach. And I think why, if there's any success in my coaching and Inflection Point Partners more broadly is coaching, I think there is this really heightened awareness of what drives the individual, you know, the why, the what's important, yes, and the outcome and the realization and the manifestation and the outcomes. But the driver of the why is really important. So I have to give a nod to Viktor Frankl and Man's Search for Meaning.
Yeah. And also, I mean, it's such a beautifully written book and so emotionally powerful to a book that, I mean, obviously I would recommend it to anyone. Matt, thank you so much for taking the time. It was a real pleasure to have this conversation with you. Now, if our audience wants to try to interact with you, follow you, where can they reach out?
So they can find me on LinkedIn, and it's Matt Spielman, S-P-I-E-L-M-A-N, on LinkedIn. Please connect with me. Be fun to go back and forth. The book is available on Amazon. It's Inflection Points, How to Work and Live with Purpose. And we have a bunch of information about the practice and the tools are there that I mentioned during this discussion. And one can go to Inflection, it's a mouthful, inflectionpointpartnersllc.com. And there's my bio and our coaches' bios and what we do and how we do it and information about the book as well.
I'll be sure to put that in the references in the show notes so that people can download the game plan. And thank you so much for, you know, giving it away freely. One last question I'm sure the audience is going to ask is, would Matt or some of his coaches be available for coaching for French speakers or French speakers that know how to speak English? I mean, would you be open to coaching people or also that live in France? Is it something that's possible?
So we do have coaches who speak French. And we are open for French coaching business for sure. Yes.
Hooray.
We have two coaches who are located in Europe. And we are actively coaching in Europe and in France actually.
Great. Well, thank you so much, Matt, for the time. And I hope to talk to you soon again.
Sounds great. I look forward to that, Pauline. Thank you very much for the opportunity.
Bye-bye. Bye bye les amis, c'est la fin de cet épisode, mais avant de vous quitter, quelques détails en plus. D'abord, pour toutes les infos sur le podcast et cet épisode, ça se passe sur polinegno.com, vous aurez tout promis, juré. Aussi, si vous souhaitez me contacter pour me poser des questions ou me proposer de nouveaux invités, eh bien n'hésitez pas à le faire directement sur LinkedIn, Instagram ou YouTube, je vous attends. Enfin, encore mille merci de m'avoir écouté jusqu'ici, j'espère de tout cœur que ça vous a plu et je vous dis à très vite pour un nouvel épisode.